and welcome to JOSPT Insights, the podcast that aims to help you translate quality research to quality practice. I'm Claire Ardern, the Editor-in-Chief of the Journal of Orthopaedic and Sports Physical Therapy. It's great to have you listening today.
This week on JOSPT Insights, we are here with another Sports Corner series. This week, we are covering rock climbing with Dr. Kerry Cooper. I am very excited about this one as a mediocre to poor climber myself. I have a lot to learn, not only about climbing, but rehabilitating these injuries. Dr. Kerry Cooper is a doctor of physical therapy specializing in climbing injuries based in Salt Lake City, Utah. She has over 30 years of climbing experience underneath her belt, along with multiple publications related directly to rehabilitating climbers. We will have the descriptions of those in the show notes, so check them out. She also works as an educator and a consultant to international climbing teams, U.S. national team members, as well as other elite-level climbers and outdoor athletes. My name is Dan Chapman. I'm a U.S.-based physical therapist and owner of Chapman PT in Baltimore, Maryland.
And I'm Chelsea Kuman, a physical therapist and athletic trainer at Stanford University Athletics.
Dr. Cooper, thank you so much for joining us on JOSPT Insights. As I mentioned, I'm a climber myself, and I'm very much looking forward to this.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
Oh, well, the honor definitely goes both ways. Before we get started, though, can you just give us a 50,000-foot view? For those PTs listening who don't know much about rock climbing, what should they know?
Rock climbing is a fairly young sport. This is rock climbing's second Olympics. It is comprised of several different individual disciplines. You can think of it a little bit like running. So there are sprinters, there are short distance runners, there are long distance marathon runners. And the rock climbing equivalent to that would be bouldering, sport climbing, and trad climbing. And these disciplines are basically defined by their type of protection that's used. You can further divide those into indoor and outdoor climbing. From a movement standpoint, there is a lot of crossover, and especially from the kinds of demands that are put on the body. But in practice, they feel very different depending on your level of fear and comfort with gear. From an injury perspective, there are trends that we are starting to see that go with these subdivisions. If we speak about rock climbing in general, there are absolutely a lot of, like I said, there's crossover in movement. So there are crossover in the injuries that we see.
What are these demands? What is required from the climber to be able to complete these tasks?
People, and I'm going to assume here that people are thinking of climbing as an upper extremity sport, which is true. We certainly use our hands differently than any other sport or activity on the planet, basically. But really, climbing is a points of contact sport. So what that means is you have three points of contact that you're hoping are on the wall while you are advancing a fourth. And there is dynamicism with those movement requirements. There's a ton of tension dispersal that happens through the body in order to keep those points of contact. So if we want to draw some comparisons with other sports, maybe you'll think of gymnastics when it comes to the dynamicism. Jiu-jitsu, we get ourselves in really strange positions. And even baseball, mostly because of the types of shoulder injuries that we see, we are required to have a ton of shoulder range of motion. And also rugby, because it's a high impact sport sometimes.
Is it supposed to be a high impact sport, or is that when things go wrong?
Both, actually. So high impact, meaning that you can fall in bouldering. And, you know, I fall all the time. Boulderers, we are champion fallers. Occasionally it does go wrong. And so you have to be able to handle that impact. And sometimes, you know, you could land at a sideways angle, and 9 times out of 10, it's fine. But that one time that you're a little bit tired, you can't handle the impact. The same thing goes if you are leaping from one hold to another. So you're catching it with maybe one arm and say you've only got your distal fingers that you're dangling off of, that's a ton of tension through your shoulder, your clavicle, your neck. There's a lot that's going on there. That's where we kind of draw those comparisons to rugby. We get clavicle injuries. We get like SCM dislocations and shoulder dislocations, full dislocations. So it is high impact, but mostly we can manage it. So a lot of climbing is managing the forces that are being put through your body.
That like reminds me of a little bit of like wrestling almost too. Like a ton of range of motion, but then also you are meeting the forces put on you. So it's also a ton of strength at all of those ranges of motion, which again is that like gymnastics portion of it as well. So you said range of motion of the shoulders. Anywhere else that like is the most important to have either range or strength in a certain way?
Well, we need a lot of strength in our hips. We tend to have more knee motion. So the muscles that sort of hug the knee and allow for that stability to happen while you're putting force through, say, the side of your foot, while your hip, knee, ankle are all externally rotated and flexed, and you're trying to drive through that combination of joints. There is a lot of strength that needs to happen in those areas, as well as rotator cuff. The deltoid, tricep, lat, bicep. I mean, climbers tend to, we have not actually huge muscles, but we're really strong.
Yeah, I think also not only are rock climbers really strong, but something that surprised me a lot too is, I mean, it differs a little bit depending on, you know, if you're doing more of the like endurance climbing or the bouldering, but regardless, you need to have a wide range of endurance, but also rate of force development and power, right? The ability, and then eccentric strength as well. What would you say are like the top 3 to 5 injuries that you see in climbers that come to see you?
I hate to hone in on the hand, but I'm going to mention it really quick because those are the top 3 injuries that we see are actually all in the hand. So they are flexor pulley strains and ruptures. That's flexor tendinopathies and joint related injuries. Aside from the hand, shoulder slap tears, but also less severe shoulder pathologies. So most of the injuries that we see in the clinic are not severe. They're actually overuse injuries. And so they're not a full slap tear, or they are a asymptomatic slap tear. And it's something else that's going on. Also, we see knee and meniscal injury. So those are basically, I would say, the top 3 areas.
And so the meniscus is that falling, or is that just like torquing that knee in those weird positions trying to produce force?
So here's where we get into some of the emerging trends. We are getting a lot more meniscal tears from heel hooking. And when I say heel hook, I'm going to describe it a little bit. It's where you have a hold, you know, you can imagine a climbing hold, and you stick the side of your foot on it. So I'm talking about the outside of your foot, and your heel is mostly on it. Like that is the point of your foot that you're mainly putting the pressure on. And then you're going to use that heel like a hand, and you're going to try to pull yourself upward. So regardless of what direction your knee is facing, it could be facing directly up towards the ceiling. It could be towards the door over in the corner, way far to the right of you. It can really be located anywhere. But as you start to put that pressure on your heel and drive your body upwards, sideways, you can rest like that. When the muscles that help to support the stability of that position start to fatigue, we lean into those inert structures, and that's when we get the injuries.
Some of the things that lead to the most success in a climber are really like what can lead to failures as well. So is that kind of what you're alluding to there? Like your ability to kind of create these force in these funky positions, but then once those stabilizing structures are fatigued, it goes. That applies to the shoulder, I'm guessing. How does that apply to the hand?
I would say more in the joints of the hand in that case. Sure. So as humans, we tend to grab things with our thumb It's like a sideways hand position where you're like using your palm and your thumb and you're gripping with your fingers. Think about like grabbing a cup, you know, and I'm going to try to describe this to your listeners because it's very visual. Imagine that you're grabbing that cup and then start to put pressure on your fingertips. You notice that there's a force that's produced through the system. And say you add like, I don't know, half your body weight to that, you start to feel that force. It's more of a vertical force coming down through your joints, which creates torque.
Okay, so we have our common injuries and kind of the demands of the sport. So if a rock climber is coming into your clinic with any of these injuries or something else, what are some key things that clinicians should keep in mind when we're rehabbing these athletes?
I think the most important rehab concept to consider when treating climbers, even if you don't know climbing, is that almost any activity can be modified based on the limitations of specific injuries. Climbers, and I would argue most athletes, don't respond well to advice to just not climb. They want to know exactly what is your reason behind that? How is that going to help them? And why is that your primary suggestion for the wellness of that person or injury? As a clinician, be curious. Help the climber figure out what they can do, because they are probably telling you what they can't do already. And it's nice to think about or to listen to what an athlete is telling you that they can't do, because that helps to fill in the gaps of your knowledge. As you say, okay, I can't do a Gaston. Well, what is a Gaston? Show me. And they'll show you a sideways hand position. You go, oh, that is a lot of internal rotation on the shoulder. I get that. They want to talk about rock climbing. Let them. And I would say, aside from that, climbers are really strong in their big muscles. So they can make your tests look normal. But if they're coming to see you, there's definitely something wrong. And you've got to kind of parse that out a little bit. And most of the time, it comes from those smaller intrinsic or stabilizing muscles. And if you isolate out the rotator cuff, for example, there will be imbalance. The upper trap will take over immediately. You'll notice it. It just gets huge. And then suddenly you're like, oh, wait a minute. Let me really hone in on these tiny little things, because these guys are really strong and they can cheat. They'll cheat all your tests.
It seems to me that there's a couple of different climbers that come into the clinic. You have the overuse injuries, you know, the people that got really into climbing. They had never climbed before. They're climbing 3, 4, 5 days a week. And then 6 weeks later, you know, their biceps tendon is screaming, right? And that's one category of climber that's going to be coming into your clinic. But then you also have the really advanced level climbers that are getting into these wild positions and producing a ton of force in these crazy positions on the wall. And I can imagine that before we get them back on the wall, before they're actually really ready to climb again, we need to make sure that they can produce forces in these wild positions. But can you really talk about how important it is to dial in the easy movements, the simple movements, and find out where these deficits really lie?
I would argue that it's when you isolate out these little things, that's when you find the weaknesses. So that side-lying external rotation, if you put them in the perfect position and you ask them to hold it there, it's like the hardest thing on the planet. But if they're allowed to show, be like, I can put my arm out here, I can grab onto this, they're going to recruit all kinds of other muscles. But you're going to lose those tiny little nuances that really need to be online for them to be able to do these hard movements. And this is for, you know, your recreation athlete all the way to your elite athlete. I think that's exactly where the difference lies, is that usually we don't need to really isolate it out. But in these cases, I think it's prudent.
You said like modification is key, which we love. And maybe that's, you know, modifying a field athlete is like slightly different than modifying a rock climber. So for those who are less used to that, What are some key considerations when you're kind of returning someone to climb? Is there like a volume component, an intensity component? Is like doing a V1, is that going to be worth it for someone who's typically on a V10? Like something like that. Like how, what kind of considerations are you making when you're doing a return to climb?
Depending on the severity of the injury, if you don't know how to appropriately prescribe climbing back into their program, it's nice to start with percentages. So say you've got a V6 climber, and we'll use, for your listeners, it's V0 to V17 is the hardest currently. And so you take a V6 climber and they come to you with the shoulder pain and they're like, well, can I climb? And say you don't really know, but you can think of it as, okay, do you have pain just sitting there? If they have pain just sitting there, they probably shouldn't be climbing until they can modify that pain. But then if they start out at 0 to 25%, that's a great place to start. At least they can climb. And it's educating them about maybe what some of their habits have been in the past. Maybe they didn't warm up. Maybe they don't know how to warm up. Maybe they only climb a certain level or a certain inclination. So start with vertical, start with 0 to 25% of their normal climbing grade and their normal climbing time. So if they normally climb for 4 hours and you're putting them at a 0 to 25%, I would recommend not going beyond 45 minutes in that case. You know, it's not a perfect equation. It's at least enough for them and for you to start to delineate out exactly, is it a volume problem? Is it an intensity problem? Is it tissue problem? What's the issue here?
That's really helpful. Typically, like a recommendation wouldn't be to switch to bouldering or something, because usually they're in one kind of one of their categories. It would be just the percentage of what they were in the same category. Is that correct?
Correct. Although I would say if someone was really severe and they're, this gets into a little bit of nuance of climbing. Bouldering as a discipline is graded when you start bouldering, it's harder than the easiest sport climbs. So if they tell you, no, I don't feel comfortable bouldering right now, okay, that's fine. Start with some top roping and 5.6 to 5.9. A V0 is about an 11A, I think, or a 10D, somewhere in there. I've got a cheat sheet for this. Put me on the spot.
It would be fair to say, though, that like, please correct me if I'm wrong on this, that like, if you have a boulderer and you're trying to still get them on the wall, bouldering is not in the cards for them, but you're trying to get them back on the wall, they might be able to do some lower level top roping. But if you have a top roper who cannot really do anything on the wall, you're not going to send them over to do bouldering.
I think that's fair.
Carrie, is there anything else that we missed that you really want to impart on the world of rehab about climbing? Because you freaking love treating climbers. You love climbing. So this is your chance.
You know, I think because climbing is so new and we're still learning so much about the injuries, just listening and trying to, even if you're not a climber, just trying to level with the climber and think stability, 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 stability. Go there first. And then if they're perfectly stable, choose the bigger muscles and test those. Talk to the climber about climbing. They would love to tell you what they can and can't do right now.
Do you find, in just anecdotally in your experience, that proximal weakness, so this is say rotator cuff weakness, leading to a higher incidence of distal injuries? So, you know, someone coming in with a hand injury, but you're finding, for instance, they have a lot of weakness when testing through the shoulder.
Yeah, absolutely. And the same thing goes with like side to side. So if they come in with a shoulder injury, what does the other shoulder look like?
Oh, do you have any ways you recommend people testing hand strength, different grip strength, things like that?
With training for climbing, we have these things called edge blocks. There are different brands of this, and they have different types of handholds on them. And typically they have like a cordelet that you can either hang them from something or, you know, push your foot onto it to create tension. I set that up with a, like a force.
A crane scale or something?
Yeah, like, exactly.
Like a, yeah, crane scale. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Usually I don't do it as a strength measurement. I do it as a tolerance measurement. So what is their tolerance to load, especially for the hand, is how much pressure can they create before they actually feel their pain, or like right when they start to feel it. I do this actually with elbows as well. I've started to apply it to most of the climbing injuries that I see because I want to improve that tissue tolerance to load. So it becomes more compliant, more accepting of the forces that I really want to put through it.
That is really great insight because we, I mean, I feel like most clinics now have some way to measure that, whether it is a handheld dynamometer that you press on or a crane scale that you pull on. So that can be another way if like not sure how to assess tolerance. That's great. What's the numbers behind that?
Something I will say, if you're going to measure grip strength, I think best practice these days is to do it, we call it a half crimp. So it's flexion at the PIP joint, roughly mostly extend or like relative neutral at the DIP joint, and then relative neutral at the MCP joint. So it looks like a little hook. And that is a really safe place to train, especially for the pulleys. And it's also a safe place to test because if we're strong in a half crimp, you can either create strength through specific exercise in a full crimp, or you can say, okay, it's really the open hand that's weak. We can draw a lot of information just from a half crimp, and it's relatively safe to test and to train.
It is very hard for me to get into that position. Oh my gosh, I am not a climber. Wow. Okay.
So your listeners could see the like hand dance that we've been doing today.
Guys, listen to that part again and then try it. Like, it's not possible?
No, you can do it. Your left hand, your MCP joints are in a little bit too much extension, but your right hand was.
I do is manual therapy with these, okay?
You should have really strong grip strength.
Okay. Now I'm ashamed. All right. I'll work on it. Well, Carrie, thank you so much for joining us. This has been awesome. I am so excited for people to listen to this and be able to treat climbers better because you're right. They do love climbing and they love to tell you about climbing and they also do not want to stop climbing. So some great tips on being able to do that for our climbing athletes. We really appreciate it.
I hope that the clinicians who are listening were able to get some nuggets of knowledge. If they have more questions, I would be happy to answer.
Perfect. So if you do have more questions, please feel free to reach out to Dr. Cooper. Thank you so much, Dr. Cooper, for coming on the show. And as always, we want to thank all of you for listening to JOSPT Insights.
Thanks for listening to this episode of JOSPT Insights. For more discussion of the issues in musculoskeletal rehabilitation that are relevant to your practice, subscribe to JOSPT Insights on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google, or your favourite podcast app. If you like JOSPT Insights, help others find us. Tell your friends and colleagues and rate and review us. To keep up to date with all the latest JOSPT content, be sure to follow us on Twitter, we're at JOSPT, and Facebook, we're JOSPT Official. Talk with you next time.